This is Melissa Harris Perry, and on today's episode of The Takeaway, we're looking at issues of race through the lens of documentary media. Now, like us here at The Takeaway, we know many of you have been following efforts by many state legislators to ban the teaching of critical race theory in public schools. And yesterday here on the show, we spoke with Janae Nelson. She's the incoming president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. During our conversation, she emphasized that the fight for a fair and equitable nation rests on the ability of communities to openly and honestly examine the history of their collective experiences.
We are in the midst of a serious battle, a fight for the soul of this country. It centers around our ability to hear, access, and absorb the truth.
So today, we're going to talk about a documentary film, an investigative podcast, and a Hollywood movie. And each tells us a true American story. And each is centered on racialized experiences in our country. So let's start by going back to 1971.
There was 70% black and brown prisoners, all white guards. What could go wrong?
Grab the guards, grab the keys.
All hell broke loose.
Attica. The name is now synonymous with what happened there 50 years ago. Overcrowding in the upstate New York Supermax prison was appalling, and conditions were harsh, many even describing them as inhumane.
Guys were complaining about the basic things like toothpaste. A roll of toilet paper lasts you a month.
The inmates were considered like animals.
They beat you up in your cell, and then they take you to segregation, and sometimes you don't come back.
You're hearing footage from the documentary Attica by filmmakers Stanley Nelson and Tracy Curry. Using archival footage and original interviews, the movie explores the deadliest prison rebellion in American history, which occurred over the course of 5 days in 1971, when Attica's population of overwhelmingly Black and Latino inmates seized control of a portion of the prison, taking 39 guards and staff as hostages. For 4 days, these men inside Attica sought the recognition of elected officials about the appalling conditions they were forced to endure inside the prison. And the demands these men made, they actually resonate today. Take, for example, that advocates have described the current conditions at Rikers Island as a humanitarian crisis. In fact, more than a dozen pre-trial detainees, in other words, people who have not yet even been convicted of a crime, have died in custody at Rikers this year. And Rikers inmates have described sleeping on the floor and having to relieve themselves in bags because there aren't enough toilets. 50 years ago, conditions like these reached a breaking point in Attica. And with prisoners holding hostages, they commanded media attention. But ultimately, the relentless attention also fed the mounting tensions outside the embattled prison. And on the fifth day, New York's governor ordered a breach. Helicopters dropped tear gas. State troopers and the National Guard shot into the haze. They killed 29 inmates and 10 prison guards who were being held as hostages. Akil Shakur, one of the survivors of the assault that day, spoke to Joseph Jedion, a producer here on The Takeaway, and he spoke to him for the WNYC series, Storming the Gates, 50 years after the Attica prison uprising.
They shot the gas into the corridor where we was at in A Block corridor. It was so cloudy, it tore the skin off your arm. That gas was pepper gas. They wouldn't use it in Vietnam. They came in shooting, and it was only like 8 or 9 of us up in A Block corridor. So I told my friend, who I knew from the street for years, don't go out first and don't go out last. Let's get between. And what happened was, when we went out, when I looked around, I thought they were shooting rubber bullets. They shot the guy in the neck and blood came out. I felt something hit me in my chest.
Tyrone Larkins was also there.
Correction officers, state troopers, National Guards quelled a riot with shotguns, assault rifles, tear gas that literally knocked people to their knees. They showed that to the whole world. Picture a barrel, a big barrel, okay, with a whole bunch of fish in it, and a guy standing over the barrel with a shotgun and pulling the trigger. That's what happened, man.
Larkins is featured in the documentary Attica, and I spoke about the film with one of its co-directors, Stanley Nelson.
Attica was and is a maximum security prison 250 miles upstate from New York City. In 1971, at September 9th of 1971, the prisoners took over Attica. It was the largest prison rebellion in the history of the United States. Because they took over 30 guards and civilian prison workers hostage, they had a standoff which lasted for 5 days while the prisoners demanded certain changes in the prison. One of the things that makes Attica so different from any other prison rebellion, besides the outcome, of course, but is that the prisoners said that they wanted the media to come in and film the whole thing as they negotiated, as the rebellion took place. They felt that the media and filming would give them some kind of protection against retaliation by law enforcement. It ended disastrously, and over 40 people were killed in the retaking of Attica. All of them were killed by law enforcement.
And when you talk about law enforcement and you talk about prison guards, there's no escaping race at the core of this film and at the core of this experience. As you all were interviewing and having conversations, I was so struck by how swiftly we were introduced to the family of one of the key guards. Can you talk to me a little bit about that choice?
Yeah, one of the things that we talked about and we worked on really a lot is where to begin the film, you know, because the prison, the rebellion took place because of certain conditions in the prison. But we didn't want to start just talking about the conditions because you don't care, you know, if you're not introduced to the characters. So we throw you right in the middle of the rebellion, you know, as we're showing the opening credit, Attica, you know, you're hearing sirens and you're dropped right into the rebellion. And we go back and we talk about one of the guards, Billy Quinn, who's injured really badly on the first day when the prisoners took the prison. He was beaten very badly and taken out of the prison to a hospital right away. But the fact that he's injured really badly ends up kind of being one of the pivotal points in the whole rebellion.
Was it difficult to secure because it's the daughter who we meet. I mean, I guess it must be within like 3 minutes or something. And you're right. You do get thrown right into this documentary. Was it difficult to secure that kind of conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was difficult. It took a certain amount of gaining of trust from the people in the Attica town, this kind of all-white town. It also took a lot of trust building with the former prisoners. And so the people from the town, I think, add an incredible dimension. They actually, you know, were incredible. They gave us, you know, photos and their home movies. And so you really see kind of what Attica town was like. It was, you know, really kind of an all-white town, where the jobs really were provided by the prison. You know, somebody says, you know, it was a prison town. And that was, you know, fathers and sons worked in Attica prison. And that was the livelihood of the town.
I reflected as I heard that on the idea of like coal mining towns or company towns, and the idea that prisons become the economic engine, right? And that Attica is part of reminding us of, you know, we say something like the prison industrial complex, but what that actually looks like for real human beings.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as the townspeople say, you know, that, you know, most of the people on their block worked in a prison, you know, and when we say, you know, a prison town, I mean, you have to understand that they were prison guards, but they had no training at all. It wasn't like they were sent to, you know, school, like, you know, and had to learn how to be a guard. You know, one day, you know, you're looking for a job and you're signing papers, and the next day, you know, you're a prison guard, and they were not trained in any way, and some of them were extremely brutal with the prisoners. As one of the former prisoners says, it was fear. They ruled the prisoners by fear.
And yet, we know that in so many ways, this is not how the story was presented. A lot of the film uses this incredible, previously unseen archival footage, including phone calls between President Richard Nixon and Governor Nelson Rockefeller. I'm wondering how you got access to this, and talk to us a little bit about what this brought to the film.
You know, it's very clear that Richard Nixon is pulling the strings behind the scenes. And as said in the film, you know, Rockefeller wanted to be president. I mean, that was his goal. You know, he's one of the richest men in the world. He had everything. You know, he wanted to be president. And he was thought of as being kind of, you know, soft on crime, you know, kind of the left wing of the Republican Party. And so he wanted to show that he was tough on crime. So he was on the phone constantly to Nixon. And at the crux of the prison rebellion, you know, after 4 days of kind of stalemate, the prisoners just want him to come up there to Attica. You know, okay, don't come in. You know, if you're scared to come in, you're nervous, don't come in. Just come up and show your concern. Also, by coming up, he would see what the conditions were and the mood was outside the prison, because National Guard and law enforcement, highway patrolmen, townspeople had been standing outside the prison for 5 days and were getting madder and madder, and rumors were circulating that the prisoners were castrating people and it killed people, and none of that was true, but those were the rumors. And the prisoners felt that if Rockefeller came and saw the mood of these people, he would think twice about sending them in to take back the prison, because it was obvious that they were out for revenge and that they were in many ways bloodthirsty. But you know, Rockefeller was talking to Nixon on the phone, and Nixon, you know, urged him not to go. And so that the prison rebellion in this tiny little town, Attica, 250 miles from New York, reached all the way to the president of the United States.
So the narrative was that that it was inmates who killed hostages. Talk to us about the truth of what really happened.
Yeah, well, in the final day of the rebellion, the fifth day, it was very clear that law enforcement was going to come in and take the prison by force. One of the things that the prisoners did was they took the hostages and put them on the catwalk so that everybody could see, and put these homemade knives to their throats. And as the inmates say, you know, in the film, they did that just so that law enforcement would think twice about coming in. You know, they had no intention of hurting these guys. But maybe if you see these guys, you know, that some of them were brothers and cousins of the law enforcement, you would think twice and not do the massive retaking of the prison. But that didn't stop law enforcement and Rockefeller, and they took the prison by force. And I think 10 guards were killed, 29 prisoners. And the first newscast that they came out that we have in the film said that the, you know, the guards' throats were slit by the retaking of the prison. The prisoners slit the guards' throat. It came out the next day that no throats were slit, that actually they were killed by law enforcement as they took the prison. And that, as one of the prisoners says so beautifully, that, you know, they were running towards the guys with the guns thinking, we're saved. And they were killed, you know, at that moment by law enforcement.
I was so struck by the level of organizational capacity, the idea that the prisoners immediately begin organizing their sections, thinking about the list of demands, right, going into the work of negotiations. And yet, kind of where we began on these questions of race also became a critical aspect of how this all ended. Can you say a few words about that, about how race was intervening as a kind of wedge here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, what I call, you know, casual racism is part of, you know, the story, and it's overwhelming. You know, the racism of the guards, you know, the all white guards, the prisoners were divided up by race, you know, and that really changed when they took over, you know, the prison. All of a sudden, as they say, you know, they became one unit. They became prisoners. They wasn't white or black or brown. You know, they had to unite to try to get out of, you know, what they had started and to try to get out of it with their lives. But race, it was just casually from, again, you know, the guards to when they take over, and they're constantly called the N-word, you know, over and over again. As you see in the film, on incredible footage, as the guards take over the prison, they yell white power. Nixon and Rockefeller, you know, Nixon calls him after the prison is retaken, and you know, 40 some people are killed, and the first thing Nixon asks are, is it the blacks? You know, were any white people killed? So it's over and over again, you know, race is kind of the subtext of the whole rebellion and the whole film.
Stanley Nelson, documentarian, filmmaker, director of Attica. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.